ghosts, specters, whatever you want to call them, they've been around for thousands of years.
Apparently she died from a tooth infection in one of the upstairs rooms in the house.
As have the locations they haunt. History of a Haunting podcast tells you all about these famous, infamous, and almost famous locations, and why they became terrifying places to visit. Grab a glass of wine and settle in with your hosts, Archie.
I mean, that was definitely the wrong thing to do.
And Carrie.
Nobody asked for it, Carrie.
Nobody fucking asked for it, but hey, my podcast, and I'll say what I fucking want.
Two people just winging it in life, and this podcast. So enjoy this week's episode of History of a Haunting.
All right, Zoom updated there.
I was going to say, I thought that was something only you heard as the meeting.
No, that's totally new. Okay. All right, well, always learning new things here at History of a Haunting. Hi, guys, I'm Carrie.
I'm Archie.
And I'm Laura.
And this is History of a Haunting.
Sorry. This background sucks.
It's not ideal.
It's not ideal.
Carrie and I are actually in person recording today while I'm viewing her new house and having a freaking family reunion here for her Memorial Day party.
Yeah. Not my family either. Entirely his family.
Yeah, my sisters and my brother are coming out.
So yeah.
This is exciting.
Yeah. It's gonna be a lot of fun. I also get to meet my crazy family. So it'll be an interesting day.
Eye-opening day.
Eye-opening. Yeah, Laura, keep your phone by you because we're both going to be texting you like, oh, my God.
Oh, I'm so excited. And I just saw a view two gracefully gliding through the air.
Yes. Archie and I went to Go Ape today, and we didn't die. We will be posting videos. We took videos of each other on each thing. So we'll be putting those together in a little video for the Patreons to show them how ridiculous it all was. The only casualties were my fingertips. I've got blisters on three of them. Bruising.
Yeah, we're
scrapes.
Kind of covered in bruises and scrapes.
But other than that, tomorrow may be a vastly different story.
Tomorrow will be the culmination.
It really will. We've had a really great time. Tomorrow is all working though, because we've got a lot to do before the big shenanigans happen.
That's cool. I'm going to get a facial tomorrow. That's my big hour.
I want to go get a facial instead.
Yeah.
That sounds like a great time.
And then I'm going to a party at my friend's yoga studio. So that'll be exciting.
Oh, neat. That'll be fun. Yeah. That'll be a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, we're Archie's here and Laura's going to be here in July.
Yes, he is.
And we are doing a paranormal investigation with my new group, Southern Entities Paranormal. We're going to the old hospital on College Hill, which was episode what ago? You guys remember? Three, four?
No. Yeah, like three or four.
Three or four? Okay.
Past month-ish,
yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting. We're going to, you know, Laura's a skeptic, so we're going to put her in some, you know, dark and scary places and see what happens.
I'm all for it, as long as there aren't bugs.
Yeah, as long as there are no bugs, then it'll be just fine. So anyway, all right. So we put up a background because we're on Zoom. We put up a background to see if Laura could guess where we were going, and she couldn't because I tried to find the most like vague picture of the location that could have been anywhere. Any ideas as to the country?
It looks English.
Yeah.
Ding, ding, ding.
Ding, ding, ding. Get that girl an air fryer. She just won round one.
Right.
Actually, I thought the air fryer replaced the toaster oven for gay recruitment.
I already have an air fryer.
Okay. Well, she's already recruited gay.
So. Oh, yeah. So she would already have the air fryer.
Oh, yeah. Right. That's the mid-level management.
Was like being gay, like a pyramid scheme. Like,
It totally is.
Totally. Like Mary Kay, you got so many underneath you and you get a pink Cadillac.
I mean, that's the ultimate prize, but yeah.
All right, so she wins round one, so she gets
nothing. All right, go on.
Right, a round of applause.
Thank you.
Full of the dad jokes here today.
We are, which is ironic given we don't have dads.
Well, anyway, we don't.
We don't. She does, but she's not the one doing the dad jokes.
No, because I hear them all the time. That's what the difference is. Like,
they don't.
I have to deal with my father and his crazy nonsense.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so Arch, why don't you tell Laura and the peoples where we're taking them today in England?
Okey-dokey. We are going to the Borley Rectory in Essex in England.
Have you heard of this one?
No, but you said rectory. So I'm interested. This sounds very like a bunch of...
Bookalicious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So is this Church of England rectory?
Yes. Mm. Well... Yes, yeah. Sorry, yes, it is.
Okay.
All right, well, Borley is a small hamlet on the borders of Essex and Suffolk, lying between Sudbury and Long Melford, some 15 miles from Bury St. Edmunds.
That was so white, that was so American, Melford.
Melford. And I know that distance measurement means absolutely nothing to anyone, so it's 50 kilometers or about 30 miles northeast of the center of London.
Okay, but how many telephone poles is that? We just changed the unit of measure.
Oh, God, I don't remember.
Who can do a quick conversion of 50 kilometers into telephone poles?
I don't know. Let's go like 300.
Aaron, write that down.
Yeah.
Right.
Aaron, get that converted.
The village comprises of a few scattered houses, and its only noticeable feature is the 12th century church. Borley Rectory was constructed on Hall Road near Borley Church by the Reverend Henry Dawson Ellis Bull in 1862. He moved in a year after being named rector of the parish. The house replaced an earlier rectory. Shut up. Don't judge me.
He's like, that's right. I haven't recorded in person with you in a long time. I forgot how this shit goes.
The house replaced an earlier rectory on the site that had been destroyed by fire in 1841. The nearby church, the nave of which may date from the 12th century, serves a scattered rural community of three hamlets that make up the parish. There are several substantial farmhouses and the fragmentary remains of Borley Hall, once the seat of the Waldegrave family. Drink.
You deserve one for that. All right.
A sip.
Next to the church stands the 16th century house, Borley Place. In 1862, Borley Place was the home of the rector of the parish, the Reverend Henry Dawson Ellis Bull, M.A., while he built across the road Borley Rectory to house his sizable family and numerous servants. Whilst there, an unfounded tradition that the rectory was built on the site of a 13th century monastery. It is probable that at least two other buildings had previously occupied the site, an earlier rectory and Borley Manor House. As the size of the Bull family grew, the rectory was added to, originally having 8 bedrooms. It was eventually enlarged by the addition of a wing to house Bull's family of 14 children.
Wow.
Yeah, all right. 1875, 1876. And I just wanted to let you know when I used the word whilst, it reminded me I didn't give my my credit, my sources.
Oh, okay.
And one of them was borleyrectory.co.uk. So,
oh, okay.
Whilst, so also Wikipedia and encyclopedia2.thefreedictionary.com.
Cool.
All right.
Please say whilst as often as you can.
Whilst following the death of Henry Bull, 1833-92. Rector of Borley, 1862-92, the Reverend Harry Foister Bull, 1862-1927, Rector of Borley, 1892-1927.
There's far too many dates. I'm sorry. I'm already so lost.
Sorry. I'm like, okay, Lots of people.
They all succeeded his father as the rector of Orley and continued to live in the house with a number of their siblings. Both of the originals are buried in the churchyard.
And what were their dates again? I'm kidding. Please, God.
1863 to 92
Kidding.
On the death of Harry Bull, the rectory remained vacant for over a year until it was occupied by Reverend Guy Eric Smith and his wife, Mabel, in October of 1928. It was Reverend Smith who, concerned by local rumors and his own unexplainable experience, sought help from the Daily Mirror. In turn, the editor of the Daily Mirror contacted Harry Price, the well-known ghost hunter and psychical investigator. Harry Price visited the house in June 1929. Soon after his visit on the 14th of July, the Smiths moved out to be followed by a cousin of the Bulls, the Reverend Lionel Algernon Foister.
So this family was the Bullsmiths?
Pretty much. Replaced by the Foisters. He was the rector of Worley from 1930 to 1935. 2 years later, Harry Price, the ghost hunter, rented the house for a year. In 1936, the livings of Borley and neighboring Liston were merged, the rector, Reverend A.C. Henning, residing at the Liston Rectory, about a mile away from Borley. Becoming redundant, Borley Rectory was, at the end of 1938, sold to a Captain W.H. Gregson. Shortly afterwards, in what may be described as strange circumstances, the rectory was burned down. So this guy knocked over an oil lamp while he was moving it.
Oh my God.
And burned it to the ground, which, oh no, the previous one burned to the ground too. The,
oh, it did?
Borley Place.
Oh.
Yeah. So all of the locals were gossiping and talking about
it.
That.
Keeps burning to the ground.
Yeah. But in reality, the guy knocked over an oil lamp. You know, when you use fire for light, things have a habit of burning to the ground. Storms caused further damage to the structure, and it was subsequently demolished. Harry Price assumed that with the end of Borley Rectory, the phenomena associated with the building would also come to an end. He later declared that this conclusion had been an error and that the ghosts had simply moved across the road to Borley Church. After Price's death in 1948...
Well, their house was burned to the ground.
Right? Where else are they going?
Exactly. I mean, it rains a lot in England.
They needed shelter.
Mm-hmm. After Price's death in 1948, the Society for Psychical Research appointed a panel to investigate his investigations. They were extremely critical, stopping just short of calling Price a fraud and accusing him of creating all the phenomena himself. They apparently ignored the fact that there had been haunting at the rectory and on its site long before Price started looking at the place. A more recent investigation was conducted by the Society's R.J. Hastings, whose review was much more restrained and less personal than the previous attack on Price. Acknowledging Price's apparent need for publicity and the amateurishness of some of his investigations, Hastings did conclude that there was no evidence of outright fraud on the part of Price. Because Borley Rectory has long since been razed, it is now too late for a proper look into all that might have happened there.
Yeah.
But from the many years of stories, true or false, the rectory will forever be remembered as, quote, the most haunted house in England. Which,
dun, dun, dun.
Pretty much everything we do is the most haunted something, wherever it is.
It's true. It's true. All right. Well, you guys, okay. So.
And now to bring down the room.
Yeah.
Harry Hopper.
Here I am. We got death, we got sex, we got all kinds of stuff. Yeah. So my part is you're gonna have to pay attention because there's a lot of moving pieces in my part. And a lot of people, because you just rattled off like how many rectors that they had.
Person.
Well, the guy had the son. And then there was the Smiths.
The Father and the Holy Spirit.
Yeah, there was the Bull Smiths. And then there was, you know.
The Foisters.
The Foisters and the Cloisters and the whatever. so my part has a lot of moving, parts to it.
Okay.
So we're going to get right into that. We're going to take a quick break, guys. Please listen to this paranormal buddy podcast of ours. Your friend, my friend, Laura's friend, everybody's friend, Caleb.
Caleb.
And the Paranormal Burrito.
Monsters, demons, ghosts, and goblins.
Oh my, I didn't see you there. You really spooked me. Just like my podcast, The Paranormal Burrito. We're a weekly podcast featuring a new guest every episode. So join us for fun and spooky stories. If you have a spooky story you'd like to share, email us at theparanormalburrito@gmail.com. The Paranormal Burrito, your true stories.
We haven't heard from Caleb in a
while. We haven't. He is doing all right. He's working really hard on his mental health awareness campaign.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome.
Okay. So I got my stuff from Wikipedia.com as well, burialsandbeyond.com, and an article written by Richard Sugg for the mirror.co.uk. He's a columnist and an author of 8 paranormal books. So his article was really interesting. I liked it. Yeah, it was really detailed too.
Huh.
So Archie, as you had mentioned in your portion, he's already got his hand on his mouth, like she's going to make me refer back. A lot of hauntings and things like that, reports of hauntings had been happening before Harry Price came on the scene.
Mm-hmm.
Nonetheless, I mean, regardless if, you know, the SPR? Society for Psychical Research. Yeah, the SPR thought it was his work on this particular case was legit or not. Regardless of that, local legends have actually been long established, primarily concerning the supposed existence of a Benedictine monastery in the area around 1362.
Mm-hmm.
So tradition states, and a lot of children that have grown up in England have, that was one of the interesting things that I read about on this article by Richard Sugg, is that kids in England, and I also watched a really fascinating YouTube show. These two British girls covered Borley Rectory as well. Everybody in England has grown up with this story.
Mm-hmm.
A tradition states that a local monk in this Benedictine monastery began a secret affair with a nun from a nearby convent. And I guess after their affair was discovered by their superiors, the lovers were brutally punished. The monk was swiftly executed by hanging, but the nun suffered a far worse fate, having been bricked up in the convent walls and left to suffocate and die.
And I did come across that in my research. I had to weed out stuff.
I bet you did. Yeah, yeah.
One of the theories is that the Bowles family of 14 children made up the story to scare their younger siblings.
Yeah.
And I thought that was hilarious.
I thought so too. But the problem with that is that the ghost of the nun was seen before the Bowles came on the scene.
Mm-hmm.
So either way, it's a terrifying thought.
And especially because knowing back at that time,
1392, it was a Catholic.
Yeah, it wouldn't necessarily be a common practice, but we wouldn't be shocked to find out that years later they tore down the walls and found a skeleton.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, the Catholics, we like our relics, so there's always skeletons and random stuff hanging around anyway. True.
So tales of Borley's ghost first emerged in 1863, which you had mentioned, when the reports of school children were circulated as they claimed to have seen the ghost of a nun. So in 1900, another group of children claimed to have seen the ghost of a nun in the rectory's grounds that disappeared as soon as they approached her. With these, you know, first paranormal events beginning so early, they started out kind of innocuous with this nun, and a few locals would later remember having heard unexplained footsteps within the house about that time.
I'm sorry.
What?
I'm just chuckling to myself over here. the nun vanished as these children approached it. I just see these young, dirty, barefoot, unruly, rural British children yelling and running at it, throwing rocks, and be like, I fucking vanished.
Oh my God.
Wearing potato sack pants and sorry.
Is that though like what they'd wear?
I have no idea. That's just the image I got in my brain. Because I'm a horrible human being.
Or maybe, you know, you're drawing on a past life.
Oh, great.
Maybe you were one of those horrible potato sack children.
It's all coming back to me now.
Right?
Well, I am shaped like a potato today.
Oh, my God. Okay. So on July 28th, 1900, or as they like to write it in Britain, on 28 July 1900, four daughters of the rector, Henry Dawson Ellis Bull, saw what they thought was the ghost of a nun at twilight about 40 yards or 37 meters or 22.5 telephone poles. I'm kidding. I didn't do that. That's totally no, made up.
That's like three.
Oh, is it like three telephone? Okay, sorry. So sorry. About 40 yards, 37 meters, 22.5 telephone poles from the house. They tried to talk to it, but it disappeared as they got closer. So Borley Rectory had been built between all of those dates Archie rattled off. between 1862-1863. As he mentioned, occupied by two previous vicars, both of the Bull family, before being taken up by a third gentleman and his wife in 1929. It was erected on the site of two previous dwellings.
Yes.
Okay, good. So in 2001, a local antiquarian, what is an antiquarian?
Someone who specializes in antiques and things of antiquity.
He brings it. I ask these obscure questions and he's like, this is what it is.
Well, that's how you would personify the
antiquarian.
Mm-hmm.
You got it.
Okay.
Yay.
Yee claimed the ghostly activity had been reported as early as 1819, with the nun allegedly sighted in 1836. So from 1863, the large family of Reverend Harry Dawson Bull were disturbed by the sounds of rushing water in the house, which had neither main water nor interior pipes. Bells which rang even after wires were cut, which wasn't that a claim in the Octagon House?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was.
And it was like
rats.
Yeah.
Stepping on the cords.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Knocking on doors, crashes, and heavy footsteps in areas of the building.
Some big ass rats.
Right. Right. Maybe they don't mess around with their rats in England. Maybe they just really are huge. Initially, much of this centered, as so often is the case in poltergeist situations, on one of their young daughters, Ethel, whose door was singled out for knocking each night and who had once had her face slapped as she lay in bed. Don't love that whole... That's not a good time. When you're by yourself, it's not a good time.
Just don't pull my hair.
So in 1886, this I thought was really funny. And pray not for her, but... In 1886, a new nursemaid, Elizabeth Byford, initially made light of the supposed haunted room that was given to her. But around 2 weeks later, she awoke at midnight to the sound of slippered footsteps outside her door and nobody was there, and presently gave her notice.
That's funny.
Presently, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Love a good British article. The local organist who played in the church, Ernest Ambrose, later said that the family at the rectory were very convinced that they had seen an apparition on several occasions. So this is the first Henry Bull minister, that lived in the rectory. Mm-hmm. Now his son, when he took it over, was a kind of a different story. So his family, by contrast, clearly did not scare easily. The first Henry Bull kept up his duties until his death in May 1892 and was immediately succeeded by his son, Henry Foister Bull, who held the title until he died in June of 1927. So Henry Foister apparently was described by most folks as outwardly to have been a jovial, energetic figure who liked running between church and the rectory on sermon days. He definitely wasn't the kind of person that was fond of flights of fancy. He was a very practical, pragmatic kind of a guy. So the article said that not the kind of person fond of imagining ghosts, and the same probably went for his dog, Juvenile. You know, dog?
No.
So he has this dog. And they were out in the garden one day when the retriever began howling and cowering at something behind the fruit trees. So following, Chewie's like, I don't like this. Don't talk about the dog. Dogs and ghosts don't mix. I'm outside the door barking my head off. Following the dog's gaze, Bull saw a pair of legs in the fruit trees. When they moved out of cover of the foliage, the body was seen to be headless. So when you said headless horseman, I was like, oh, she's channeling my story. She knows. So the body was seen to be headless. Apparently it had crossed the garden and walked right through a locked gate. So the reverend, the younger reverend, the son, had also saw the notorious ghostly coach of Borley, drawn by two horses and driven by a headless coachman. This will come back in over decades.
Oh, wow.
So apparently this particular coach seems often to have been silent when seen and invisible when heard.
Okay.
On another occasion, Bull heard hoofs and heavy wheels on the road behind him. Stepping in to let the vehicle pass, he heard it rush by him and saw nothing, though the noise gradually diminished and could be heard dying away in the distance.
Hmm.
So I guess on July 28th, 1900, his daughters, Ethel and Freda, were returning to the rectory from a summer party. Emerging from the trees onto the lawn, they saw a female figure with a bowed head dressed entirely in black in the garb of a nun. It appeared to be gliding rather than walking. After watching her for some time, the girls took her to be a ghost and became intensely frightened. One ran in to fetch their sister Elsie, who responded, "What nonsense, I'll go and speak to it." I have time for this bullshit. We need to have a conversation.
We need to settle this right now.
Right now, this is some dumb shit. It's
very British of her.
Right? She then ran across the lawn, only to have the nun turn and face her for a few seconds before vanishing into thin air right before all of their eyes.
Wow.
So in...
that's that.
Yeah. The nun was again seen in the fall of 1927 by a traveling carpenter who actually saw the nun 4 times in 2 weeks. Yeah. So
it's a little stalkery, huh?
Right. So whether or not the nun actually like did exist, whether that was actually a real story, some nun is haunting this joint.
Yeah.
So the guy, the carpenter, Fred Cartwright was his name. He wasn't a local to the area. He had never heard of the Borley ghost stories. And on each occasion, he actually assumed the figure to be alive.
Wow.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
His suspicions were kind of aroused only on the fourth sighting when the woman inexplicably disappeared from his view.
Mm. Yeah. That'll fuck you up.
Right? So on 9 June 1927, Harry Bull died and the rectory again became vacant. So this is what I'm talking about, guys, where there's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of names.
It's a very intertwined story.
It is a very intertwined story. So in the autumn of 1928, so it sat vacant for a little over a year, Reverend Guy Smith and his wife Mabel moved into Borley. The couple had no children. And I guess one day while cleaning out the house, because obviously it had been, you know, empty for a year, Mabel discovered a brown paper parcel. And it was in one of the like rooms that wasn't really, they didn't really call it a basement, but it wasn't like the first floor. So it was
like a storage cellar or something.
Yeah. Kind of in this wooden cupboard in the back of the cupboard. Mm-hmm. She was kind of cleaning it out. She discovered this brown paper wrapped parcel. And when she unwrapped it, she found and opened the box. There was a small human skull inside. Mm-hmm.
Creepy.
Yeah. So the article, this was presently buried in the churchyard by her husband. And it's believed that her discovery of this human skull is what then triggered more paranormal activity in the house. Alone in the house shortly after the burial of this human skull, the Reverend Guy Smith was crossing the landing outside the notoriously haunted Blue Room, which when I went to search for that, I couldn't find anything on hauntings in a Blue Room in this place. Mm. Yeah. But when he was on the landing outside the Blue Room, he heard whispering, rising to form the audible pleading words, quote, "Don't, Carlos, don't." So that's really specific, I think. Yeah. That's a very, mm-hmm. very specific. So footsteps were heard in the rectory so often that one day, Guy Smith leapt out from behind a wall with a stick to strike the intruder, only to find himself slicing thin air. Bells rang, again, were ringing on their own. Their servant, Mary Pearson, twice saw the phantom coach speeding by. Shortly after, a family reported a variety of incidents. Again, the sound of servants' bells, despite their being disconnected, lights appearing in windows, and unexplained footsteps. A lot of people also saw lights going on and off, not on and off, but on in the house when they knew nobody was there. Hmm. So they'd just be like turned on but maybe like, I think like the family was all at church for a service. Right. Or something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, I lost my place. Please hold the line. Okay. More strange lights, again, with the unexplained footsteps. And then again, the ghostly apparition of a horse-drawn carriage was seen nearby there's so many people that are reporting the same things that don't know
over so many years.
Over so many years and decades. And yeah. So the couple, Guy Smith and his wife Mabel, went on to contact the Daily Mirror, saying that their intent was to contact the Society for Psychical Research. Naturally, when tabloids are contacted, issues arise concerning the individual's intent, the desire for publicity, the legitimacy of their claims, kind of a la, I mean, granted, this is decades before Amityville, but I mean, yeah, once you start contacting a newspaper, all bets are kind of off with your integrity and your intent.
Mm-hmm.
However, the issues of fame versus sincerity would similarly plague Borley throughout its years of infamy, and it's about to get really fucking weird and wild. The newspaper sent a reporter out to kind of investigate, and while the reporter was just kind of, he went in interviewed the family, and then afterward, he was just kind of walking around the property as the sun was setting and it was starting to get a little dark. So while he was on the grounds of the, quote, most haunted house in England, he didn't actually see the ghostly nun or the spectral, eerily silent coach and horses, or headless coachman that others had reported, but he did spy a light in the rectory. So when someone went inside to investigate, no light was on.
Hmm.
Yet, outside, the reporter and his photographer could still see it.
Oh.
You're both like, hmm. So on 11 June 1929, This is with psychical researcher Harry Price, read Wall's first two reports on Borley. So Wall is, again, the reporter. Mm-hmm. And within hours, the most famous era in the rectory's haunted history had begun. So the next night, Harry Price went out to the rectory, and he began watching with the reporter. The reporter was there for a second night. While there, then that night, he was certain that he saw the nun moving towards a stream in the garden. Soon after, while they were going through the home, a dark red glass candlestick whizzed past their heads and shattered against an iron stove. Pebbles and slate bounced down the stairs. The servants' bells rang on their own, and keys shot simultaneously from two different doors.
Which they got pushed out?
Yeah.
From the other end, like the old locks?
Right, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, more than one brisk run up the stairs failed to reveal any human pranksters in the rectory, which at the time, like I had mentioned, was occupied by Reverend Guy Smith and his wife, and they didn't have any kids. So, I hit the back button and it.
Oh no.
So I gotta scroll and find my place. So Harry Price decided that he wanted to go in and he wanted to do a very thorough investigation, and he wanted to, like, basically kind of live with them for a while. Mm-hmm. To really get into and meat and potatoes of what was going on in this rectory. So on June 12th, he arrived and, you know, parked it. And immediately, phenomena of a new kind appeared, such as more throwing of stones, a vase, and other objects. Spirit messages were tapped out from the frame of a mirror. All kinds of weird, bonkers stuff. However, as soon as he left and, like, moved out, all of these ceased. Ooh. Yeah. Smith's wife later maintained that she already suspected Price, who at the time, he was an expert conjurer. He was kind of very similar to Harry Houdini in that he was an illusionist and things like that, so that he could go around and kind of debunk all of these spiritualists, because that was, the movement was real huge. And so he was kind of like Harry Houdini in that regard. A total skeptic until he had had an experience that turned him into a believer.
Right.
So, but that was what he was known for. It was being this, like, illusionist. So she believed that he was faking it all. She had maintained that she believed he falsified the phenomena. So in the end, the Smiths moved out of Borley in July of 1929, and the parish had had some difficulty in finding a replacement. And the Reverend Lionel Foister took on the haunted parish only at the intervention of surviving members of the Bull family to whom he was related.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So Reverend Lionel Foister had a wife, Marianne, who was many years younger than him, and he had an adopted daughter, 3-year-old Adelaide. So I'm guessing this is maybe like the second marriage for her or whatever, because he was her stepfather. So like Ethel Bull before her, Marianne seems to have acted as a focus for whatever was haunting Borley. Now, remember, Ethel was a little girl who got slapped in the face when she was in bed one night.
Mm-hmm.
That's that little girl. So now the activity hit new levels of violence and persecution. Numerous household items vanished, whilst objects which they did not own appeared from nowhere.
Oh.
Yeah, so now we have a feeding ghost and, like, planting evidence. Yeah, I told you, this has everything. It's got duplicity, it's got murder, it's got sex. We're getting to the sex, hang on.
Well, I mean, the one guy had 14 kids, so.
No, yeah. We're getting to illicit sex.
Oh.
Not prostitution or anything.
Oh.
I hope it's, can we dial this up a notch?
Right. One day, Marianne took off her watch to wash her hands. Turning back to retrieve it after she had dried them, she found the strap had disappeared.
That's weird.
Which is weird. Mm-hmm. Though the watch part still remained. Objects were frequently thrown at or past the couple. Marianne was once struck so badly by an invisible force that it left a cut on her eye and a black eye.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck around, find out.
Right? She was thrown out of bed several times, and mysterious writings apparently connected with her now began to appear on the walls of the house. On several occasions, Marianne said she saw the ghost of Henry Bull, the very first one,
mm-hmm.
who had allegedly, and this had kind of been passed down generations, who had allegedly warned his family that if discontented in the afterlife, he would return as a poltergeist.
Oh, geez.
Right? She really wasn't that, like, she wasn't the most reliable witness in Borley's history. It's telling that the dressing gown she saw Bull wearing was recognized by older Borley locals who had heard her description. So she had seen him one night, and he was wearing this dressing gown.
Mm-hmm.
But locals who had been alive and who would know, they were like, yeah, he always wore that. So it wasn't really hard leap for her to be like,
right.
He was wearing this old dressing gown that he just loved so much. Well, yeah, we all kind of fucking knew he had this thing.
Right.
Kind of a situation. So her husband, Lionel Foister, wrote an account of various strange incidents that occurred between the time the Foisters moved in October 1935, which was sent to Harry Price. This guy documented over 2,000 instances where paranormal phenomena was happening in the house. 2,000.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
One side note, who fucking knows what their priest is wearing to bed? I'm just curious. Like, why is that a known thing? What is he doing? He's just wandering around? Like, who fucking knows?
Well, the children know.
Like, boxers, priests, what's happening? I don't know.
Right. There were 14 children. Maybe they had sleepover. I don't know. That's a good question, though. It's valid.
Yeah.
It's valid.
I mean, the kids knew.
The kids knew. So maybe they're, I don't know. What do you wear to bed, Laura?
Depends on the season. But
in Arizona, as little as possible in summer.
Yeah. And then
on who's there.
Yeah. And then in the winter, you know, some cozy pants and fuzzy socks or something. I have my feet get cold. I can't handle it.
Oh,
my
really?
Feet get cold. Oh, I hate it.
Yeah, mine too. I have to sleep with socks on. Mm-hmm. But otherwise,
do boxers, you wear anything else?
Boxers in the
future. Just socks. Just socks.
Just socks. With a little pink ribbon on the side.
Oh, cute. Remind me to wash the sheets on his bed when he leaves.
Right, exactly.
Basically, yeah, same thing. Like, jammy shorts and a tank top, really.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right, now that everybody knows what we sleep in.
Mm-hmm. We're super fun.
Already started.
Yeah. Let's do this. We've got butter schnapp.
Butterscotch schnapps.
Butterscotch schnapps.
If we can't say it, we can't drink
we
it.
We should.
No. That should be the test. That's the official test.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you can't say butterscotch schnapps.
Oh, God. So even the stepdaughter, the little Adelaide, she was apparently struck and persecuted. So now Harry Price was back on the scene with this family. There was no shortage of outside witnesses. And here are some of the outside witnesses that had experienced stuff. There were workmen that were working on the house who saw stones tumbling down the stairs. There's Lady Whitehouse, who was a friend of the Foisters, and her nephew, Richard. They had been there once when, on December 14th, 1931, Lionel, Marianne, and Richard all saw a thin glass tumbler drop from thin air to land at Richard's feet. Richard would later stress that nobody could have thrown this without breaking it. Lady Whitehouse was present when a fire started spontaneously. She also saw flints falling from nowhere.
Like what sparks?
Sparks? That's more than poltergeist.
Flints. So what would that be? Like matchstick heads or?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm thinking, well, back then, more like
someone dropped their
but like,
yeah,
that's what I'm wondering, if it's more like a sparkler kind of
weird, right? Yeah.
You know I mean, like when you strike a, you know, when you see have the sparks coming off.
Yeah, somebody that flints for their Zippo fallout, or what happened?
Right.
So in January 1932, another visitor, Mr. G. Lestrange, had only just parked his car when he saw a figure standing by the porch. Seconds later, it vanished before his eyes. And later, when he was staying there, he heard footsteps pass by the sofa on which he was sitting and then fade through the wall behind him. That had to have been hella disconcerting.
Wow.
This is why I don't like sofas against the wall. What if people walk past it into the wall?
Don't have to worry
about it. It's a valid concern.
No, we really don't. My sofa is far from the wall.
Well, and nobody's lived here before.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it could be Indian burial ground, but we'll find out.
No, my mother actually made me do a research of the town.
Did she?
Before we, yeah. She really wanted to know. I even contacted the historical district.
Oh,
is it for real? You're like, what are we building on?
He was like, I'm not moving into a house that's haunted. You better find out. I'm like, okay. Yeah, no.
That's so fucking awesome.
Yeah.
I'm like, I was just joking.
Yeah, no, she was dead serious. She's like, I'm not moving into a haunted house. She was like, I know it's brand new, but what kind of investigate the land? I'm like, okay, sure. So yeah, I contacted the historical society.
That's amazing.
Civil War? What's going on?
I'm
just going to start hiding like little arrowheads, little like musket balls in your yard.
Right, their dogs will dig them up from the yard.
I'll wrap bacon around them.
Oh my God, Laura, we should have had a conference about this a week ago.
God.
And I'll just leave them around. That way the dogs come running in with some sort of...
Well, the problem is the dogs would eat these things.
I know. I'll figure it out. I got time.
Right? Good
Lord. How did your dog ingest an arrowhead?
Where are you going to
build? Also, there's bacon in their stomach. Fucking Laura.
Where are you going to put your fire pit? That's where I'll put it. And then when you dig up your fire pit, dig up to put it in.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah, I see what you're doing. We're going to stick with the fire pit I bought from Wayfair. We're not digging a hole anywhere.
Amal, you're going to want a garden sometime.
Oh my God. I'm going to book her a room at the Candlewood Suites in Wake Forest. She's not staying with me, Archie. My mom will have a heart attack. Okay.
Oh, put her in the
first. I love Nancy.
Oh, right. Put her in the first play, The Extended Stay America. Holy shit. Okay, so Mr. Lestrange had only just parked his car when he saw a figure standing by the porch. Seconds later, it vanished before his eyes. Later, while he was there, he heard footsteps pass by the sofa. Ah, that's where we were, where he was sitting, and the steps went through the wall.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Okay.
Apparently, Foister, the Reverend, twice tried to conduct an exorcism, but his efforts were fruitless. In the middle of the first exorcism, he was struck in the shoulder by a fist-sized stone.
Where are these stones coming from?
That's what I would love to know. They're just like falling down the stairs, they're hitting people in the face, they're causing black eyes, they're...
All right, just curious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So because of the publicity in the Daily Mirror, these incidents attracted the attention of several psychic researchers who, after investigation of the Borley Rectory, were unanimous in suspecting they were caused consciously or unconsciously by Marianne Foister, the Reverend's wife.
Mm-hmm.
I did read some of this, yeah.
So... one common conclusion pervaded all of the investigators' summations that Marianne was the cause. Whether intentionally or subconsciously, she was to be firmly placed at the center of the storm. So then I had mentioned that there was these writing started to be on the walls.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It proved to be one of the most enduring images of the Borley saga and the one that maintains interest to this day. So Marianne's name first appeared scrawled on scraps of paper throughout the house, just kind of randomly. So when they discovered this, the investigators attempted to establish a method of written communication with whatever the spirit was that was like writing to her. Mm-hmm. Or find out who, you guys have heard of automatic writing?
Mm-hmm.
Trying to find if somebody was like doing some sort of automatic writing.
Okay.
Now, so they attempted to do a method of written communication, asking what the spirit wanted, to which the spirit replied, rest. On paper.
Wow.
That's weird.
I'm on a nap too. I'm gonna.
I mean, that's what I what do you want? A nap? Maybe a cheeseburger. Kind of hungry. It was years later that the scribbles. So this went on for a long time. It was years later the scribbles moved to the walls and attempts to engage with the restless spirit continued. The writing and attempts at communication were studied, documented, enhanced with pencil, photographed, removed, with no solid resolution to where it was coming from, how it was being done, none of this shit.
Hmm.
The couple did have a toddler, so they were like, you know what, this kid is kind of an inveterate scribbler, so maybe he's doing it. Okay, but I'm sorry, a toddler. And this is the first picture I had mentioned. I have pictures. So this is the first picture I'm going to send you guys of what these writings were that she received. So let me go ahead and send it over to you guys. So you can kind of see, like, it's her name. Please help get light mass prayers. Marianne, I cannot understand. Tell me more. I listen. I cannot understand. Please tell me more. I mean, it's just sort of, no toddler fucking wrote this. It's, some of it's in cursive.
Right.
My 20-year-old son doesn't know how to write. But that's just because
Zane's cursive is better than his printing. I have no idea how.
Oh, really?
It's way better.
Yeah, no. The American education system failed my son and his generation because they quit teaching it in third grade. Anyway, what do you guys think?
That's pretty crazy looking.
It's definitely not a toddler though, right?
No, definitely not a toddler.
It's kind of crazy because, like, it almost looks like Marianne is sort of the same handwriting. Please help get what?
Right. I'm assuming she was ruled out as this is not her handwriting. It's not her husband's.
Right, right.
Okay.
And then
I'm like, maybe her husband's just fucking with her.
The way that I'm looking at this is the block letters are the reply from Mary.
Okay. All right. That makes sense.
We're trying to get more information.
Or maybe it's one of the investigators trying to.
Or,
okay.
Yeah. It definitely looks to me like one of the living replying.
Okay. So then there's scribbles, but this still, toddlers don't scribble in somewhat word form.
Yeah. In letters.
Most toddlers don't know letters. Like, we're talking exactly. 2 or 3. Like, that's.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, at that point, maybe they're just recognizing what letter is what. They're not really writing so much, usually.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. Yeah, and Zane Lewis learning his ABCs, you know?
Right.
Like.
What blue is, and, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll definitely put this on our social media. We'll let everybody decide. But anyway, these are copies of the letters and the writings on the wall that were being done. So there was a gentleman who was investigating all of this, and a man by the name of Andrew Clark, and he went on to kind of explain the timeline of the writing of these letters and these notes on scraps of paper, the shit on the wall. He writes, quote, "There was a rash of scrawls on bits of paper before the end of March 1931, which were still happening when the Braithwaites, a prominent local family interested in spiritualism, visited the rectory, held a seance, and managed to save one of the bits of paper for posterity." He then subsequently wrote, "The wall writings themselves just happened to coincide with the start of Marianne's affair with the lodger, Frank Peerless."
Oh.
Didn't you read that?
I did not. actually.
Yay.
It's her husband fucking with her.
So.
Like he knows.
Right?
I need help.
Right. Is it fucking Circleville letter writer back in right? England in the fucking 30s?
Like, I can't understand. Tell me more.
Right. What do you want? Rest. Okay. So, despite many recorded incidents being considered authentic or truly unexplained, any perceived legitimacy of Marianne's claims was irreparably damaged after she confessed to being in a sexual relationship with the family's lodger. So she would go on to explain that she frequently used claims of supernatural phenomena to conceal her affair, explaining away noises and suspicions with a swift mention of a ghost. So the story of Borley had already, by this point, had sensation and death. And then here's where we add sex into the reports. It's sort of like just further etched, you know, this particular family into the history books as the ghostly scandal gripped the nation. Love when a scandal grips a nation. I think it's great. So anyway, the Foysters left Borley in October 1935 because Lionel Foyster, he had ill health. I guess he had really severe arthritis. But by this point, the church had actually had enough of Borley Rectory.
Mm-hmm.
And two parishes were merged. The building was put up for sale. Before the buy, and here's where it gets, this is what I'm talking about, you guys, moving parts, different people, a fucking cluster. So they put it up for sale, but before a buyer could be found, Harry Price comes back into the picture.
Mm-hmm.
He decides that he wants to rent the house for a year so that he could do a real thorough fucking paranormal investigation. But he realizes that he can't do it by himself, so he decides to put an ad in the paper. And the advertisement began, "Haunted house, responsible persons of leisure and intelligence, intrepid, critical, and unbiased, are invited to join a rota of observers in a year's day and night investigation of an alleged haunted house." So he was kind of, he received so many applicants. And after weeding through, he whittled his group of people down to 48.
Wow.
So 48 people gave up their lives for a year, moved into Borley Rectory with Harry Price, and they conducted a day and night investigation of the house. So these people were reliable observers, and they were engineers, they were doctors, they were undergraduates, they were in the military, these people that he got. So they had, you know, recorded knockings, crashes, the bell ringing, the movement of objects. There was a report done by a Mark Kerr Pierce, who was a Geneva diplomat, conducted the report of the phenomena that was at least 10,000 words long, which isn't actually that much for a year's worth of investigation from 49 people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So like the Black Dahlia episode I did, for the Patreons, that was 7,000 words.
Yeah.
This was 10,000.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, Anyway. So it was actually thanks to Price's energy and enterprise that Borley became not just one of the most haunted houses ever, but perhaps the best documented. In the autumn of 1938, Borley was purchased by Captain W.H. Gregson, as RJ had mentioned, and at midnight on 27 February 1939, it caught fire. buying it for just £500, Gregson had it insured for £10,000. Later, his son Anthony stated that his father had started the fire himself
knocking over an oil lamp.
The oil lamp, yeah. But until he came forward, everybody was like, the ghost burned it down.
Again.
The ghost burned it down, yeah. So, however, with the rectory now just a shell, the haunting actually continued. A chauffeur heard the invisible phantom coach hurtling by him, and I don't even want to say this name because I know you guys are going to fucking run with it. A chauffeur.
Whatever do you mean?
We are always dead serious all the time. A chauffeur heard the invisible phantom coach hurtling by him, and Charles Brown and his friends one night saw a girl in white looking through the burned out window of the blue room upstairs. She was standing on empty air.
And she, did she take his football away?
There it is.
All right.
There it is. I thought immediately, I was like, wait, why is there a beat of time? Who is not going to say something?
No. We're trying to be good.
Yes. I just didn't put it together. I'm just stupid.
Because I said Charles Brown and not Charlie Brown.
Yeah. Zoom. Right over my head.
Is her name Marcy?
Right.
Is she mean?
Yeah. Called him sir. Oh, wait, no.
No, that's the... Oh, that's those are the lesbians.
Yeah. Yeah. Reverend Batty, sir. That's right. Okay. So army officers who tried to use the site during the war had stones thrown at them and found several general at the... Sorry. Two sentences. Army officers who tried to use the site during the war had stones thrown at them and found the general atmosphere so negative that they did not stay. From 1947 to 1950, James and Alice Turner occupied surviving the cottage. On hot summer days, they would hear the sounds of voices and laughter from children in the orchard. And on one occasion, the sound of heavy footsteps as though somebody was walking on bare boards. During a 1961 investigation, battery torches and car headlamps all failed without obvious cause on the property. And as recently as 2000, Colin Wilson spoke to a television crew which had recorded hollow footsteps, the sound of a creaking door that no longer exists, and a deep sigh that impressed everyone who heard it as profoundly unhappy.
Oh, I make that sound all the time.
He's done it like five times in this recording.
It's like, oh.
Yeah.
That's just how I breathe. It's a condition.
It's a condition.
Much like my sarcasm.
Anyway, these are all of the different hauntings and stuff that has happened since it was demolished. And Arch, when did you say that it was demolished? 40s, I think you said?
It didn't give a specific date, just when Gregson burned it to the ground. Storms caused further damage to the structure, and it was subsequently demolished.
Okay.
I didn't say when, but post-1938.
You know what? I should have shut up because I think I haven't my part. Okay. Anyway, so yeah, a lot of different things happening on the site where the rectory once stood. The war, the army officers. I'm sorry, I think if you bring the military into it and they, you know, we've done a lot of military bases, we've done, you know, Okinawa, we've done I feel like they're kind of above reproach. They're trained to be, you know.
Mm-hmm. And when the army guys are like, nope, I'm out, there's something not right there.
1,000%. Yeah. Right. So anyway, let's talk a little bit about Harry Price. Is he a pro or is he a con? What do you guys think he is? You think he's a legit paranormal investigator, or do you think he's a con man from way back?
I think he was a pro up until he met Mary.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it seems like it was too much for the publicity. You know what I mean? For his name, for, you know, all of it. It seems a little bit too convenient for me.
Okay. So after his death in 1948, Daily Mail reporter Charles Sutton had accused him of faking phenomena. He claimed that whilst, love a good whilst.
Who doesn't?
That whilst visiting the rectory with Price in 1929, he was hit on the head with a large pebble. Sutton stated that he seized Price and found in his coat pockets were filled with different sized stones. Mm. Did you read that?
No.
No?
Not that, but...
Others. So now we know where they're coming from.
Other things, yeah.
Yeah. So in 1948... a group of members of the Society for Psychical Research, two of whom had actually been Price's most loyal associates, investigated his claims about Borley. Their findings were published in a 1956 book, The Haunting of Borley Rectory, which concluded that No, that Price had fraudulently produced some of the phenomena. Now, if you guys remember, when he went and he decided he was going to go and live with the Smith family, suddenly shit like skyrocketed. There was like all this activity. And then when he left, they were like, and then it just stopped.
And then it just stopped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Borley report, which sounds like some
report. It's
1980s like- CBS late night news special.
Right.
The Borley report, as the SPR study has become known, stated that many of the phenomena were either faked due to natural causes, such as rats.
Ratchet ass bitches.
Ratchet ass hoes. Yes.
They always cause them problems.
Those they gotta go.
Marianne, we looking at you.
We looking at you. Exercise that fucking ratchet ass hose.
Get that milkshake out of the yard and bag in the house.
It's curdled and gross. How did we get here? I don't know. I don't know how we got here.
I asked myself that every
day.
Sorry for spitting up.
Oh, did you? I didn't notice.
And my...
Okay.
And my mouse.
Jesus!
My mouse.
How did I not notice you spit everywhere? It's on my computer. Laura's like, you even got me and I'm...
Right? There's like just spots all over the...
Okay, so this group created the Borley Report, stated that the phenomena was either faked or due to natural causes such as Jesus.
Wow.
Got it.
And help me.
It's a good thing we started early today.
Such as rats. There we go. Let's really get my American on. And that the strange acoustics attributed to the odd shape of the house. In their conclusion, they wrote, when analyzed, the evidence for haunting and poltergeist activity for each and every period appears to diminish in force and finally to vanish away. One of them wrote that, quote, Mrs. Marianne Foister, wife of Reverend Lionel Foister, who lived at the rectory from 1930 to 1935, was actively engaged fraudulently creating haunted phenomena. Price himself salted the mine and faked several phenomena while he was at the rectory.
Yes.
Or she's like, no. I'm super happy. I totally believe all of this. So, Marianne Foister, later in her life, admitted that she had seen no apparitions and that the alleged ghostly noises were caused by the wind, friends she had invited to the house, and in other cases, herself playing practical jokes on her husband. Many of the legends about the rectory had been invented. The children of the Reverend Harry Bull, who lived in the house before Lionel Foister, claimed to have seen nothing and were surprised they had been living in what was described as England's most haunted house. So Robert Hastings was one of the few SPR researchers to defend Harry Price. His literary executor also defended Price against accusations of fraud. A similar approach was made by Ivan Banks in 1996. Michael Coleman in an SPR report, which by the way, the SPR still exists. It still exists. And wasn't that what was called in the Enfield poltergeist that we had done? The SPR was called in with them too. Michael Coleman in an SPR report in 1997 wrote, Price's defenders are unable to rebut the criticisms convincingly. So that's all of everything saying he was a con. Let's talk a little bit about the other side.
Okay.
So the article that I had read said that the author would agree that to anyone not familiar with the very well-documented history of ghosts and poltergeists, Borley may look too good, too vivid, too colorful to be true. He goes on to say, quote, had I come to it cold as a first ghost encounter, I would probably have felt just that. I heard my first poltergeist story in 1989. He goes on to talk about his experience in the different like cases that he's had and investigated. He goes on to say that almost everything which happened at Borley has been reported elsewhere by every possible type of witness. You do not have to believe in the afterlife to believe in ghosts, but it seems very hard to deny that Borley was severely haunted. Making Price a culprit to explain away its entire history is neither fair nor convincing.
Yeah, that's true.
So numerous witnesses reported apparitions, poltergeist phenomena, before Price had even heard of the rectory, and that includes Reverend Guy Smith.
Just because he played it up doesn't mean shit didn't happen.
Exactly. So in 1929, Church of England vicars did not lightly resort to the aid of national newspapers, nor indeed give up their homes. Something haunted every single family which occupied Borley Rectory and a number of those living around it. So as people, it caught fire twice. And then a storm destroyed it further.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was finally decided to be torn down. So this is where I'm going to send you guys my second picture.
Okay.
So as people were unable to approach the building during its demolition, photographs were taken of the frontage as the building was slowly raised to the ground. This one photo was captured, and you can all decide for yourself. In it is a picture on the left is a picture of the front. There's a little white dot in it.
Mm-hmm.
That dot is zoomed in the second picture. And when they looked at it closer, they found it was a brick hovering in the air, not falling from the roof, but just hovering in the air. So.
Hmm.
Weird.
So.
Is it a brick or like a reflection though?
It's a brick. There's no windows left in it. If you look at the like main picture, there's like.
Yeah. There's no roof. There's no roof.
Like, even if you look at the left picture, the roof is gone and there's no light penetrating the second floor.
Right. Like, what? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's not like a window in the back. It's just this random brick kind of just hovering.
Huh.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, based on that, like, yeah, it was just one of those last things where the Borley Rectory was like, all right, well, here's what last I got. This is what I got. This is
what we got.
This is what we got. So, yeah, you guys can decide for yourself. What do you think? Haunted or not haunted, Laura?
I think, well, the most fascinating thing to me is the carriage with the guys running around.
Yeah, me too. Mm-hmm. I think so, too.
But the house itself, I don't know. There seems like there's too much shit going on where people were messing around that it's hard to believe that there's something else. Mm-hmm. I mean, right. And then it seems like everything else was outside, not in the house.
In the grounds.
Yeah, the guy, the headless dude. Yeah, all of that.
The thing in the orchard. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what, if I was going to lean towards anything, it'd probably be more
on the grounds
rather than the house.
On the grounds, on the property. I agree with that.
Is that your take too? So haunted, but maybe not necessarily the building itself.
I mean, the most credible stuff that I've heard has come out of from the outside to me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And everybody that had done something that it had happened in the house, like that Marianne Boyster, she fucked all of it up.
Well, and if stuff was happening around, they might have played up that it's connected to the house, but maybe it's really not.
Right, exactly.
And she's using that to get away with her hoeing. So
right, and also, when was the last time that anybody used paranormal activity to cover up their hoeing?
I don't know, but I love it.
And then have it be bought to such an extreme, like...
Exactly, it's so funny. It wasn't me. It takes It Wasn't Me to a whole new level.
A whole new level. Shaggy has to write a whole new fucking song.
Right? It wasn't me. It was the ghost.
It was the ghost. Yeah, 1,000%.
Oh, I saw God. A man figure in your bedroom. No? Yeah. It was the ghost.
It was a ghost. I don't shy about it. I've been trying to tell you.
I'm never going to hear that song the same way again.
We need to try to rewrite it, though, actually, don't you think?
Right.
That would be kind of amazing. Anyway, guys, that was the Borley Rectory. So I fell in line with Laura and with Archie. I think maybe the property is haunted, but this specific building maybe wasn't. Harry Price was actually an interesting dude. As everybody knows, I'm a fan of it, and That's Why We Drink, and M has gone and done a number of episodes detailing the life and, you know, work of Harry Price. So that might be something that I, you know, talk about in, you know, our conspiracy corner on Patreon.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't know. I got like 9 things I got to send Jennifer to claim before you two bitches do. Which, by the way, Laura, you're June.
I know. I'm excited to do the one I have for next.
Yeah. So, yeah, Borley Rectory, guys, in England. You can't go there. I have no note before you go. I do want to say, however, that Borley is still a town. It's still there in England.
Yep, still a street corner in the middle of nowhere.
In the middle of nowhere, yeah. So, but they are very tired from the YouTube show that I had watched. Very, very tired of people going to their town because it's still pretty small.
Mm-hmm.
Looking for these ghosts. So I would say if you go to England and you kind of want to check it out, maybe just drive through it, take some pictures, but certainly don't disturb the residents. It is what it is. It's done and over with. So let's just kind of like leave the residents in peace.
Yeah, let it die.
Yeah, just let it die. That's all I got, guys. What do you guys have?
That was fun.
Yeah. Okay. Arch, as always, where can they find us?
Oh, you can find us anywhere you buy your favorite podcasts. I heard somebody say it that way the other day and thought it was funny.
Okay, we need to start charging because nobody's buying our podcast except for our Patreons.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
No, but we can be found anywhere you find your favorite podcasts. We are also all over social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We're on the TikTok, also Patreon. And we have a website, www.hohpodcast.com.
That's it. You got it.
All right.
You covered it all. Woo! Yay.
It's only take
mouthful, man.
At a minimum. No, not a minimum. It's literally just not even 2 years. You're good. You're fine. I'll take it all back. So that's it. We are off, and Laura's got some fun plans this evening. Hey, look, Archie, the sun is still up in Arizona.
It is.
Yay, we got Laura out here early. Archie and I have a lot of planning to do for a big family barbecue, and we are going to the Mordecai house.
Didn't we get corrected as to Mordecai?
Well, you know, I met a lovely gentleman when I was staying at the Candlewood Suites, and he's like, we call it Mordecai, but it is Mordecai just because Mordecai changed the pronunciation. Listen to the episode. So we're going to go to the Mordecai house in the morning, and then we have all kinds of like crazy shit to do in my house. Which is not haunted, as I mentioned earlier. My mother made me research the land. Laura.
Please send me your arrowheads and muskets.
No, shit. All right, Laura.
You hide for Nancy to find. Like a fucked up Easter egg hunt.
Most fucked up Easter egg hunt.
Oh, God, like underneath her soap dispenser.
Oh, my God. Clogging her drain so she can't put her little thing in. Okay. All right, Laura.
Yes.
We're going to start our sign-off, which is what we say every single week. We're going to mix it up a little and see if everybody remembers the parts.
I just had it and then I forgot it. Hold on. I don't remember. My part is at the end. I remember my part.
All right, fine.
We'll do it. I can't be responsible for all of this.
We almost died today and left you the entire podcast. You need to know this shit.
All right, I'll write it down.
Okay. I start writing it down. The first part is, everybody, stay safe out there because you never know who.
Or what.
Is listening.
There it is. Also, she didn't write shit down. Anyway. Nope. All right, next week, guys, we have a really, really good one. It's going to be another one of those like tag team episodes where Archie and I kind of bounce back and forth. I think we should bring Laura in on this one and just let her know what it is and have her participate too, because there's a lot of different stories.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. Laura.
All right, I'm game if you're game.
Yeah, I'll write the script.
All right.
And not an hour before recording. I'll do it Monday. Make me do it Monday.
Okay.
Just chilling. Everybody goes home on Monday.
Oh, I want to see like the city and if we didn't get enough time tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, we can do that. Yeah, but we don't have, like, chores.
Oh, that's...
We have a lot of leftover oosh to eat.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, we love you guys. Laura, we love you. We miss you.
Love you. Have fun, guys.
Can't wait till you're here. Don't bring your arrowheads. And to that end.
I'm on no promises.
God. All right. Bye, guys. We love you. And we will see you next week with a very, I think it's creepy, topic. Laura, I'll let you know in a minute. We'll hang up and I'll text you what it is.
Okay. All right. Bye,
guys. Okay. Bye, guys. Bye. We love you.
Bye, everybody.